From NPR News, this is special coverage of President Trump's announcement from the White House. I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro. Late last night, there were reports of a military operation in Syria's northwestern Idlib province. A U.S. official said the target of that raid was Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the militant leader of ISIS, and that Baghdadi is believed to be dead. With me now as we wait for the president's statement is NPR's national security correspondent Greg Myrie and also Tamara Keith, NPR's White House correspondent. Greg, I'm going to start with you. What details do you know right now about this raid?
So it looks like it took place late last night, Saturday night, in a small village called Barisha, right up near the Turkish border, just about 3 miles or so from the border. Not the place the U.S. traditionally has been operating.
Right, that was always near the Iraqi border, right?
Exactly, in the east.
All the way across the country.
In the northeast, and this is in the far northwest. Helicopters came in. It looked like some shooting took place for up to 2 hours. Several people were killed. It was a two-story house in a sort of isolated area, a few other buildings around, but not much. A little village we're talking about. The fact that the U.S. is going to this particular area really suggests that it was a very special target. Everything we're hearing points to al-Baghdadi. We're waiting for President Trump to provide official word about this.
We should remind our listeners that Russia claimed that Baghdadi had been killed in 2017, and it turned out not to be true. What will they be doing now to verify this?
So a DNA, and we're hearing that there is a body that they're checking. So, but they would need biometrics or DNA. And that's what they would use to have absolute confirmation.
Daniel Estrin is with us from Beirut. There has been a tweet this morning from a Syrian Kurdish commander. What do you know about their involvement in this operation?
Well, we spoke an aide to the Syrian Kurdish commander, and he told us that they had been cooperating on an intelligence level with the U.S., that they had been monitoring Baghdadi's movements for the last 5 months, but that the operation to nab Baghdadi was delayed, according to this Kurdish military aide, by a month because of the Turkish military operation in Syria.
Well, let's remind our listeners that this is, of course, all happening at a time when U.S. troops pulled their forces out of northern Syria, an area where they were working with the Kurdish forces, to basically combat ISIS. And so I guess it is significant that they're saying that this operation was delayed, that they knew where Baghdadi was for a long time. Daniel, just remind us who Baghdadi is.
Well, Baghdadi is the leader of ISIS, and he declared the ISIS caliphate from a mosque in Mosul. And for many years, he's been on the loose, and intelligence officials have been trying to find him. And he was thought to have been seeking refuge in the desert region between Iraq and Syria. So that's in the northeast of Syria. But apparently, he was found on the opposite side of the country in Idlib, which is in the northwest.
So there's going to be a lot of questions, I think, about how he traversed across the country, who may have helped him in that. I'm going to bring in Tam now. Where was Trump when this operation was going on?
President Trump conducted his weekend as he normally does. On Friday night, he actually was at Camp David, and then yesterday he went golfing. Kept to a very normal schedule. Then last night, he was back at the White House, as he typically is on a Saturday night. And at around 9:30 p.m., he tweeted, "Something very big has just happened!" Exclamation point. He didn't say what it was, but of course, now we do know. We're very close to knowing what it was. And President Trump is set to make remarks now today from the diplomatic room at the White House. This is a room where he was just earlier this week, or just last week now, to talk about the ceasefire between Turkey and the Kurds that he was claiming great victory on. This is a room where he goes to give these sort of direct to camera addresses to the nation, typically about security matters, and the White House is treating this as a very big deal.
Well, the president is extremely sensitive to comparisons. Obviously, the killing of Osama bin Laden can't be far from his mind. How does this moment compare if indeed it is confirmed that al-Baghdadi is dead?
Al-Baghdadi is not Osama bin Laden in terms of sort of the outsized role that bin Laden had in the American psyche simply because of 9/11, because he was on the loose for such a very long time. You know, when bin Laden was killed, when that was announced, Americans, people in Washington, D.C., went to the streets. They went outside of to the streets outside of the White House to celebrate. It was this sort of spontaneous outburst of celebration. This is not the same thing. Baghdadi, ISIS, never had sort of the outsized role in American life that al-Qaeda did. But this is significant. This is, you know, the president is not in a great place right now. He is battling impeachment. Just over the weekend, his former chief of staff was sort of saying, I told you so, you about having a chief of staff that would be a yes man.
And under a lot of criticism for how he's dealt with Syria up until now from, you know, his Republicans.
From his own party, in fact, you know, just significant and strong pushback from Republicans on Capitol Hill saying that the president's moves related to Turkey in Syria were a mistake, that it was a betrayal of American Kurdish allies. And if it turns out that American Kurdish allies helped in this operation, it is quite a moment.
Greg, I'm going to turn to you again. There was a $25 million, I believe, bounty on Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi's head. I mean, he, you know, really was one of the most wanted terrorists for the United States in the world. So not only for the president, but this has got to be a significant military victory, too.
Oh, absolutely. He did something or led a movement that we had never seen before. ISIS had tens of thousands of members, fighters coming in from all over the world. They controlled massive amounts of territory in eastern Syria and western and northern Iraq, controlled several big cities, Raqqa in Syria, Mosul in Iraq, millions of people under their control. They administered cities, they collected taxes, they had this incredible online recruit presence in both in terms of spreading propaganda, recruiting followers. So this is a guy that sort of just emerged on the scene. I mean, he had a history, but was not, you know, in 2014 is when he really sort of exploded on the scene and led this group that had done something we'd never seen before.
Daniel, this is to you. Do we know much about how Baghdadi was found? What are you hearing there?
Well, as I said, the Syrian Kurdish official we spoke with said that they had been monitoring his whereabouts for about 5 months. The question is, how did he get to where he was reportedly found in Idlib? He reportedly, about 48 hours ago, took up residence in a house next to a displaced persons camp where a lot of Syrians who had been displaced from the war live. And he rented out or bought this house. His wives and children moved in. And then last night, the U.S.-led coalition helicopters pummeled that site. There's a video that search and rescue teams in Syria have distributed showing that area completely flattened. You see it's a remote rural area, trees, desert mountains around, and just a crater and a lot of rubble.
This is going to be a question to both you, Daniel, and Greg. What does this mean for ISIS? I mean, this has obviously been a huge nemesis of the United States. As you mentioned, Greg, they had a caliphate. At a certain point, they controlled vast amounts of territory. Is this the end of ISIS? I'm going to start with you, Greg, and then back to you, Daniel.
It's not the end of ISIS, but he was a real leader. It's not somebody they can just appoint somebody else, take over, and the movement continues. So his leadership was critical. It's not entirely clear. There was some talk in August that he'd named a possible successor, but the group is now scattered. There are thought to be thousands of ISIS fighters scattered around eastern Syria, western Iraq, but they're not in a coherent sort of way where they can wage major ongoing fights as a group. They don't control territory. So it will be a huge question of how ISIS can rebuild, or if they can. And again, we have these several cross currents here. We have the U.S. forces coming out of Syria. We have the Turks, the Syrians moving into these areas. So a lot of unanswered questions, but definitely a major blow to the Islamic State.
Daniel?
Yeah, I would add, as Greg says, that this is a very symbolic victory. But the ISIS network actually has long moved on beyond Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. It's functioned for a long time without him, and it largely lives on social media. Its recruiters are attracting new members. It really truly exists in many ways on social media today. And another interesting thing is that we've been speaking to sources inside Syria, people who have been speaking with residents in that area of Idlib. Apparently, where Baghdadi was found in Idlib seems to be a place where ISIS has been comfortably regrouping. It's a place where, after the fall of the ISIS caliphate, a lot of ISIS fighters fled to that area, sought refuge and ganged up or joined up with jihadi groups in that area. And it's a place that we understand is where money is being sent out to ISIS widows and families, possibly. An attack on U.S. military personnel in January was, according to the U.S.-led coalition, planned from there.
You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. We're still waiting on President Trump's announcement from the White House, expected to be about yesterday's raid in Syria that may have resulted in the death of ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. With me are NPR's national security correspondent Greg Myrie, NPR's Daniel Estrin in Beirut, and NPR White House correspondent Tamara Keith. Tam, I'm going to bring you back in here. As we look at this moment, it cannot be overstated that the president is under a lot of pressure. He has an impeachment inquiry, and a lot of this is about convincing the American people about who's right. Do you think this will help him?
Certainly, it doesn't hurt him to be able to deliver a speech from the White House directly to the American people, talking about a victory, talking about a decision that he made that led to this, assuming it is what we believe it is. That, you know, when a president is in trouble, being able to do foreign policy, being able to
show leadership,
look presidential, stand before the American people, those are things that are helpful politically for presidents. Given that President Trump has spent so much of his time sort of fighting the impeachment battle, lashing out, last week he held this cabinet meeting that lasted some 71 minutes. There were official reasons for it, but the real reason for this long cabinet meeting was simply to sit at a large table with his cabinet looking presidential and saying, look, I'm doing the business of the American people. Impeachment isn't holding me back. And this will allow him to do that in an even more significant way.
Greg Myrie, it occurs to me, thinking about this, that this could have sort of significant impacts on the relationships in the region, specifically when we think about Turkey, when we think about Iraq. These are, important players in this region. How do you think this will play out there?
I don't think we know entirely right now, but obviously a lot of friction between the U.S. and Turkey. So was there any cooperation here? We've heard so far, probably not.
Although the Turks said that they were informed that this was happening.
Exactly. So how will the U.S. and Turkey respond? Will it improve the friction we've seen there? We've also heard Iraq might have had something to do with this. The Kurds.
Everyone's claiming that they had something to do with this.
Victory has a thousand fathers, as we know. So it could improve some ties there, but again, the U.S. forces were leaving Syria. Will this both inside the U.S. government, where the military will say, well, see, this is a reason we need to be there. We need to keep cooperating and working with the Kurds. So I think we're seeing U.S. policy sort of being made on the fly about what's going to happen to these U.S. forces, and again, all very much in flux right now. As we've seen Turkey send their troops into northern Syria, Syria and the Russians moving up. So everybody's on the move, and here Baghdadi is apparently in a place he wasn't expected. So lots of moving parts right now.
Daniel, when you think about the Kurdish area, one of the things that I've seen said after this raid is that they are now concerned that this will accelerate the sort of withdrawal of U.S. forces from that area because, quite simply, they might believe that their job is done since the original purpose of their presence was to defeat ISIS.
Well, it's interesting to see how the Syrian Kurdish commanders have been responding in the last several weeks, because on the one hand, today we're seeing a lot of congratulations. They're retweeting Donald Trump and tagging him, thanking him for this joint operation, showing that they are partners. On the other hand, extremely critical of the U.S. Pulling out its troops from that area. We spoke to the top Syrian Kurdish commander several days ago at the height of the Turkish offensive, and he was saying, I have a message for President Trump, reverse this decision to pull out U.S. troops. It's been a very kinetic and kind of chaotic several couple of days and weeks, as we've seen the U.S. announce a troop withdrawal, then send troops back to guard oil areas. And so it's interesting now to see the Syrian Kurdish forces stand by the president.
Well, Tam, let's talk about that, because the president has been pretty clear that he is still fully supportive of his own decision to pull out U.S. forces from northern Syria to end, quote unquote, the forever wars. Could this change the trajectory in some way?
Well, even as the president has been very clear about wanting to end the forever wars and saying that American troops were pulling out and that the caliphate is defeated, at the same time, he has talked about wanting to protect the oil and leaving a residual force. And the White House and administration officials have been unclear about the size or location of that residual force. So, in some ways, this moment allows President Trump a moment where he can take focus away from the muddle and confusion around U.S. policy towards Syria and the civil war and the Kurdish allies and Turkey and all of that, and move the focus to what is sort of a more clean, clear victory, and allows the president his narrative, which is, look at this, ISIS is defeated, which he's been saying for more than a year.
Hmm. Greg, do you have thoughts on that? Because, you know, it's very important to see what's going to happen next.
Right. So the president has, throughout his presidency, has said, I want to bring these troops home. I want to get them out. And yet he never quite does it. I mean, here we talked about 1,000 troops leaving, but now some might stay. Recently in Afghanistan, he almost reached a deal with the Taliban, but that was called off. Mm. It's very hard to get precise numbers, but as best as we can determine, actually, U.S. troops in the Middle East and in these war zones have increased a bit during his presidency rather than decrease. He keeps wanting to pull them out, but events and developments.
The reality of actually the various entanglements of the United States in that region have prevented that from happening.
Exactly, precisely.
And there's always been this kind of divide, right, between his advisors in the military and in the national security establishment and the president's own wants. Can you talk a little bit about those divisions?
Right. I mean, I think the military and the national security community at large feels there needs to be a presence and wants to keep troops in several of these countries, Syria being a leading example. There, again, as we try to get to the bottom of this U.S. policy there, it seems that maybe the oil was used as a reason to keep the U.S. troops there. President Trump wanted to pull them out, but there was the argument, well, oil needs to be protected. We're talking about a very small amount of oil. Syria was never a big oil producer, and its oil industry has essentially ground to a halt. ISIS was making some money off the oil a few years ago, but that has really ended since they've been driven out. There's really no oil. There are oil fields, but the oil production has really ceased there. And so this is part of this back and forth between the president and his national security team.
Just to remind our listeners, we're still waiting on President Trump's announcement from the White House, expected to be about yesterday's raid in Syria that may have resulted in the death of ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. With me are NPR's national security correspondent, Greg Myrie, who you just heard there. Daniel Estrin is in Beirut, and NPR White House correspondent Tamara Keith is here in Washington, D.C. Tamara, are you hearing anything from some of the president's supporters, from Republicans, about how they're viewing this?
Certainly at this time, there is a lot of, thanking the special forces, thanking the president for making the decision. I mean, you're even seeing that from Never Trump Republicans who are saying, that thanks to the president for making this call. And you know, the White House has been unwilling to get out ahead of the president and his announcement, wanting to save any details about sort of the specifics of his decision-making process until after he has spoken.
What will be the Democrats' reaction, do you think, in this?
You know, I think that the Democrats' reaction may not be that different from the Never Trumper reaction that I've seen, which is simply to say...
We're going to have to interrupt here. Oh. Here is President Trump's announcement from the White House. Let's listen.
Last night, the United States brought the world's number one terrorist leader to justice. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is dead. He was the founder and leader of ISIS, the most ruthless and violent terror organization anywhere in the world. The United States has been searching for Baghdadi for many years. Capturing or killing Baghdadi has been the top national security priority of my administration. U.S. Special Operations Forces executed a dangerous and daring nighttime raid in northwestern Syria and accomplished their mission in grand style. The U.S. personnel were incredible. I got to watch much of it. No personnel were lost in the operation, while a large number of Baghdadi's fighters and companions were killed with him. He died after running into a dead-end tunnel, whimpering and crying and screaming all the way. The compound had been cleared by this time, with people either surrendering or being shot and killed. 11 young children were moved out of the house and are uninjured. The only ones remaining were Baghdadi in the tunnel, and he had dragged three of his young children with him. They were led to certain death. He reached the end of the tunnel as our dogs chased him down. He ignited his vest, killing himself and the three children. His body was mutilated by the blast. The tunnel had caved in on it in addition, but test results gave certain immediate and totally positive identification. It was him. The thug who tried so hard to intimidate others spent his last moments in utter fear, in total panic and dread, terrified of the American forces bearing down on him. We were in the compound for approximately 2 hours, and after the mission was accomplished, we took highly sensitive material and information from the raid, much having to do with ISIS, origins, future plans, things that we very much want. Baghdadi's demise demonstrates America's relentless pursuit of terrorist leaders and our commitment to the enduring and total defeat of ISIS and other terrorist organizations. Our reach is very long. As you know, last month we announced that we recently killed Hamza bin Laden, the very violent son of Osama bin Laden, who was saying very bad things about people, about our country, about the world. He was the heir apparent to al-Qaeda, terrorists who oppress and murder innocent people should never sleep soundly, knowing that we will completely destroy them. These savage monsters will not escape their fate, and they will not escape the final judgment of God. Baghdadi has been on the run for many years, long before I took office. But at my direction, as Commander-in-Chief of the United States, we obliterated his caliphate 100% in March of this year. Today's events are another reminder that we will continue to pursue the remaining ISIS terrorists to their brutal end. That also goes for other terrorist organizations. They are likewise in our sights. Baghdadi and the losers who worked for him, and losers they are, they had no idea what they were getting into. In some cases, they were very frightened puppies. In other cases, they were hardcore killers. But they killed many, many people. Their murder of innocent Americans, James Foley, Stephen Sotloff, Peter Kasich, and Kayla Mueller were especially heinous. The shocking publicized murder of Jordanian pilot, a wonderful young man, spoke to the king of Jordan. They all knew him. They all loved him. He was burned alive in a cage for all to see on the execution of Christians in Libya and Egypt, as well as the genocidal mass murder of Yazidis, rank ISIS among the most depraved organizations in the history of our world. The forced religious conversions, the orange suits prior to so many beheadings, all of which were openly displayed for the world to see. This was all that Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, this is what he wanted. This is what he was proud of. He was a sick and depraved man, and now he's gone. Baghdadi was vicious and violent, and he died in a vicious and violent way as a coward, running and crying. This raid was impeccable and could only have taken place with the acknowledgement and help of certain other nations and people. I want to thank the nations of Russia, Turkey, Syria, and Iraq, and I also want to thank the Syrian Kurds for certain support they were able to give us. This was a very, very dangerous mission. Thank you as well to the great intelligence professionals who helped make this very successful journey possible. I want to thank the soldiers and sailors, airmen and Marines involved in last night's operation. You are the very best there is anywhere in the world. No matter where you go, there is nobody even close. I want to thank General Mark Milley and our Joint Chiefs of Staff. And I also want to thank our professionals who work in other agencies of the United States government and were critical to the mission's unbelievable success. Last night was a great night for the United States and for the world. A brutal killer, one who has caused so much hardship and death, has violently been eliminated. He will never again harm another innocent man, woman, or child. He died like a dog. He died like a coward. The world is now a much safer place. God bless America. Thank you. Any questions?
When did you first hear about that this was an operation that's going to get started?
We've had him under surveillance for a couple of weeks. We knew a little bit about where he was going, where he was heading. We had very good information that he was going to another location. He didn't go. Two or three efforts were canceled because he decided to change his mind, constantly changing his mind. And finally, we saw that he was here, held up here. We knew something about the compound. We knew it had tunnels. The tunnels were dead end for the most part. There was one we think that wasn't, but we had that covered too, just in case. The level of intelligence, the level of work was pretty amazing. When we landed with 8 helicopters, a large crew of brilliant fighters ran out of those helicopters and blew holes into the side of the building, not wanting to go through the main door because that was booby-trapped. And there was something really amazing to see. I got to watch it along with General Milley, Vice President Pence, others in the Situation Room. And we watched it so clearly.
How did you watch this?
Well, I don't want to say how, but we had absolutely perfect, as though you were watching a movie. It was,
this is special coverage from NPR News. You're listening to President Trump, who says U.S. forces have killed the leader of ISIS, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi.
The trip that was of great danger was the it was approximately an hour and 10-minute flight, and we were flying over very, very dangerous territory. In fact, some of our leaders said that that could be the most dangerous, flying in and flying out. And that's why last night we were so quiet about it. We didn't say anything. And I didn't make my remark until after they had landed safely in a certain area. But the flight in, the flight out, was a very, very dangerous part. There was a chance that we would have met unbelievable fire. Russia treated us great. They opened up. We had to fly over certain Russia areas, Russia-held areas. Russia was great. Iraq was excellent. We really had great cooperation. And you have to understand, they didn't know what we were doing and where we were going exactly. But the ISIS fighters are hated as much by Russia and some of these other countries as they are by us. And that's why I say they should start doing a lot of the fighting now, and they'll be able to. I really believe they'll be able to. Yes, Jennifer?
Can you say what role the Kurds played in this, just generally?
They gave us not a military role at all, but they gave us some information that turned out to be helpful, the Kurds.
And can you tell us what the role of Turkey might have been in Iraq?
Who?
What was the role of Turkey? How did they help?
Turkey, we dealt with them. They know we were going in. We flew over some territory. They were terrific, no problem. They were not a problem. You know, they could start shooting, and then we will take them out, but a lot of bad things can happen. Plus, it was a very secret mission. We flew very, very low and very, very fast. But it was a big — it was a very dangerous part of the mission. Getting in and getting out, too, equal. We went in identical — we took an identical route. We met with gunfire coming in, but it was local gunfire. That gunfire was immediately terminated. These people are amazing. They had the gunfire terminated immediately, meaning they were shot from the airships.
I'm trying to understand the timing. You talked earlier, you know, several weeks about pulling troops out, you know, and then troops were put back in, and then, you know, I'm trying to understand the timing of when this operation.
Well, I'll tell you, from the first day I came to office, and now we're getting close to 3 years, I would say, where's al-Baghdadi? I want al-Baghdadi. And we would kill terrorist leaders, but they were names I never heard of. They were names that weren't recognizable, and they weren't the big names. Some good ones, some important ones, but they weren't the big names. I kept saying, where's al-Baghdadi? And a couple of weeks ago, they were able to scope him out. You know, these people are very smart. They're not into the use of cell phones anymore. They're not. They're very technically brilliant. You know, they use the internet better than almost anybody in the world, perhaps other than Donald Trump. But they use the internet incredibly well. And what they've done with the internet through recruiting and everything, and that's why he died like a dog. He died like a coward. He was whimpering, screaming, and crying. And frankly, I think it's something that should be brought out, so that his followers and all of these young kids that want to leave various countries, including the United States, they should see how he died. He didn't die a hero. He died a coward, crying, whimpering, screaming, and bringing 3 kids with him to die, certain death. And he knew the tunnel had no end. I mean, it was a closed end. They call it a closed end tunnel. Not a good place to be.
So this was going on before you made the announcement that you're pulling.
I've been looking for him for 3 years. I've been looking for him. I started getting some very positive feedback about a month ago. And we had some incredible intelligence officials that did a great job. That's what they should be focused on.
And about what time did this operation start yesterday, sir? And have you notified?
Well, this operation started 2 weeks ago in terms of the real operation, because we had him scoped. We thought he'd be in a certain location. He was. Things started checking out very well. We were involved on our own team with some brilliant people who I've gotten to know, brilliant people that love our country, highly intelligent people. And we've had it pretty well scoped out for a couple of weeks. But he tends to change immediately. He had a lot of cash. He tends to change, like, on a dime, where he'll be going to a certain location, all of a sudden he'll go someplace else, and you'll have to cancel. But this was one where we knew he was there, and you can never be 100% sure, because you're basing it on technology more than anything else. But we thought he was there, and then we got a confirmation. And when we went in, they were greeted with a lot of firepower, I'll tell you, these guys, they do a job. They are so brave and so good. And so importantly, many of his people were killed. And we'll announce the exact number over the next 24 hours. But many were killed. We lost nobody. Think of that. It's incredible.
And when you told the Russians, you said your question.
Our dog was hurt, actually. The canine was hurt, went into the tunnel. But we lost nobody.
And so you requested to the Russians to fly over this area they controlled. What did you tell them?
We spoke to the Russians.
What did you tell them?
We told them we're coming in. And they said, thank you for telling us. They were very good.
But did you tell them why? No.
They did not know why.
Was any other
concern? We did tell them, we think you're going to be very happy. Because, you know, again, they hate ISIS as much as we do. You know what ISIS has done to Russia. So, no, we did not tell. They did not know the mission. But they knew we were going over an area that they had a lot of firepower.
Have you notified the congressional leaders about this, Pelosi?
We've notified some. Others are being notified now as I speak. We were going to notify them last night, but we decided not to do that because Washington leaks like I've never seen before. There's no country in the world that leaks like we do. And Washington is a leaking machine. And I told my people we will not notify them until our great people are out, not just in, but out. I don't want to have them greeted with firepower like you wouldn't believe. So we were able to get in. It was top secret. It was kept. There were no leaks, no nothing. The only people that knew were the few people that I dealt with. And again, Mark Milley and the Joint Chiefs of Staff were incredible. We had some tremendous backup. Robert O'Brien, Secretary Esper, Secretary Pompeo, Pence, I told you, he was great. This is a very small group of people that knew about this. We had very, very few people. A leak could have caused the death of all of them. Now, they're so good that I think nothing was going to stop them anyway. You want to know the truth. That's how good they were. We had them also surrounded by massive air power, up in the air yesterday, surrounded at very high levels. We were very low. We had tremendous air power.
And you watched all this from the SIT room? Who were you with in the SIT room when you watched this?
Secretary Esper, a few of the Joint Chiefs, Mark Milley, some generals. We had some very great military people in that room. And we had some great intelligence people, Robert O'Brien. It's really great. Yes.
Was the pullout of the U.S. troops in Syria last month strategically tied in with this raid?
The pullout, right, sure, it's a great question. And you're doing a great job, by the way. Your network is fantastic. They're really doing a great job. Please let them know. No, the pullout had nothing to do with this. In fact, We found this out at a similar time. It's a very good question, because we found this out at a similar time. No, we're after these leaders, and we have others in sight, very bad ones, but this was the big one. This is the biggest one, perhaps, that we've ever captured, because this is the one that built ISIS and beyond, and was looking to rebuild it again, very, very strongly looking to build it again. That's why he went to this province. This is why he went to this area. You know, a lot of people I was watching this morning and hearing, and they said, why was he there? People were so surprised. Well, that's where he was trying to rebuild from, because that was the place that made most sense if you're looking to rebuild. Yeah.
When you said your tweet last night, at what moment did you decide to send that?
So I sent that right after I knew they had landed safely.
When they had returned.
Right. And that was to notify you guys that you have something big this morning, so you wouldn't be out playing golf or tennis. Being indisposed.
Where were they safe? Where did they landed?
I'd rather not say. But we landed in a very friendly port in a friendly country.
Give you any pause about your decision to withdraw?
No, I think it's great. Look, we don't want to keep soldiers between Syria and Turkey for the next 200 years. They've been fighting for hundreds of years. We're out. But we are leaving soldiers to secure the oil. Now, we may have to fight for the oil. That's okay. Maybe somebody else wants the oil, in which case they have a hell of a fight. But there's massive amounts of oil, and we're securing it for a couple of reasons. Number one, it stops ISIS, because ISIS got tremendous wealth from that oil. We have taken it. It's secured. Number two, and again, somebody else may claim it, but either we'll negotiate a deal with whoever's claiming it, if we think it's fair, or we will militarily stop them very quickly. We have tremendous power in that part of the world. We have, the airport is right nearby, a very big, very monstrous, very, very powerful airport, and very expensive airport that was built years ago. We're in that Middle East now for $8 trillion. So we don't want to be keeping Syria and Turkey. They're going to have to make their own decision. The Kurds have worked along incredibly with us. But in all fairness, it was much easier dealing with the Kurds after they went through 3 days of fighting, because that was a brutal 3 days. And we would have said to the Kurds, hey, do you mind moving over 7 miles? Because, you know, they were in the middle mostly. So you have 7 or 8 miles. Could you mind moving over? Because I have to say, Turkey has taken tremendous deaths from that part of the world. You know, we call it a safe zone, but it was anything but a safe zone. Turkey has lost thousands and thousands of people from that safe zone. So they've always wanted that safe zone for many years. I'm glad I was able to help them get it. But we don't want to be there. We want to be home. I want our soldiers home or fighting something that's meaningful. I'll tell you who loves us being there. Russia and China. Because while they build their military, we're depleting our military there. So Russia loves us being there. Now, Russia likes us being there for two reasons. Because we kill ISIS, we kill terrorists, and they're very close to Russia. We're 8,000 miles away. Now, maybe they can get here, but we've done very well with Homeland Security and the ban, which, by the way, is approved by the United States Supreme Court, as you know. You know, there was a reporter that said we lost the case, and he was right in the early court. He refused to say that we won the case in the Supreme Court. So, you know, but we have a very effective ban, and it's very hard for people to come to our country. But it's many thousands of miles away, whereas Russia's right there, Turkey's right there, Syria is there. They're all right there. Excuse me. Iran is right there. Iraq is right there. They all hate ISIS. So we don't, you know, in theory, they should do something. And I'll give you something else. The European nations have been a tremendous disappointment. Because I personally called, but my people called a lot, take your ISIS fighters. And they didn't want them. They said, we don't want them. They came from France. They came from Germany. They came from the UK. They came from a lot of countries. And I actually said to them, you don't take them, I'm going to drop them right on your border. And you can have fun capturing them again. But the United States taxpayer is not going to pay for the next 50 years. You see what Guantanamo costs. We're not going to pay tens of billions of dollars because we were good enough to capture people that want to go back to Germany, France, UK, and other parts of Europe. And they can walk back. They can't walk to our country. We have lots of water in between our country and them. So, yeah, go.
You mentioned that you'd met some, gotten to know some brilliant people along this process who had helped provide information and advice along the way. Is there anyone in particular, or would you like to give anyone credit for getting to this point today?
Well, I would, but if I mention one, I have to mention so many. I spoke to Senator Richard Burr this morning. And as you know, he's very involved with intelligence and the committee, and he's a great gentleman. I spoke with Lindsey Graham just a little while ago. In fact, Lindsey Graham is right over here, and he's been very much involved in the subject, and he's a very strong hawk, but I think Lindsey agrees with what we're doing now. And again, there are plenty of other countries that can help them patrol. I don't want to leave 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 soldiers on the border. But where Lindsey and I totally agree is the oil. The oil is, so valuable for many reasons. It fueled ISIS, number one. Number two, it helps the Kurds because it's basically been taken away from the Kurds. They were able to live with that oil. And number three, it can help us because we should be able to take some also. And what I intend to do, perhaps, is make a deal with an ExxonMobil or one of our great companies to go in there and do it properly. Right now, it's not big. It's big oil underground, but it's not big oil up top. Much of the machinery has been shot and dead. It's been through wars, but and spread out the wealth. But no, we're protecting the oil. We're securing the oil. Now, that doesn't mean we don't make a deal at some point. But I don't want to be – they're fighting for 1,000 years. They're fighting for centuries. I want to bring our soldiers back home, but I do want to secure the oil. If you read about the history of Donald Trump, I was a civilian. I had absolutely nothing to do with going into Iraq, and I was totally against it. But I always used to say, if they're going to go in – nobody cared that much, but it got written about – if they're going to go in, I'm sure you've heard the statement, because I met it when any human being alive. If they're going into Iraq, keep the oil. They never did. They never did. I know Lindsey Graham had a bill where basically we would have been paid back for all of the billions of dollars that we've spent, many, many billions of dollars. I mean, I hate to say it, it's actually trillions of dollars, but many, many billions of dollars. And by one vote, they were unable to get that approved in the Senate. They had some pretty big opposition from people that shouldn't have opposed, like a president, and they weren't able. If you did that, Iraq would be a much different story today because they would be owing us a lot of money. They would be treating us much differently. But I will say Iraq was very good with respect to the raid last night.
Just to pin down the timing a little bit better here, you got back in the White House.
You're listening to special coverage from NPR News.
Well, I knew all about this for 3 days.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
he died like a dog. He died like a coward. We've been listening to President Trump announcing the death of the leader of ISIS, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, in a raid in northern Syria in a news conference at the White House. With me are NPR's national security correspondent, Greg Myrie, and NPR White House correspondent, Tamara Keith. Greg, let's recap. What did we hear?
Pretty remarkable level of detail about this raid. Absolutely. So he says U.S. helicopters went into this small village in northwestern Syria late last night. They took fire as they came in. They shot their way or blasted their way through walls, went into this compound. They suppressed the fire. They were looking for al-Baghdadi. They chased him down. Dogs were apparently involved in this chase. Mm-hmm. Baghdadi apparently went into a tunnel. He gave the impression that it was underground.
But it was a dead-end tunnel.
A dead-end tunnel. He took three kids with him, and when he was trapped at this dead-end tunnel, he detonated a suicide vest, killing himself and apparently the three children with him. The dog was injured, but that was apparently the only American casualty. Other people with Baghdadi in his compound were killed. The president also said this was a very, perhaps one of the more dangerous parts, was just flying in and out of this this region because it's not a place where the U.S. operates. Had to get permission, talked with the Russians to make sure the Russians didn't shoot down any aircraft, talked to Turkey, coordinated with them.
Because this is an active conflict area at the moment.
Absolutely. There's a lot of rebel groups in Syria, and the Syrian and Russian forces are around there. Not an area where the U.S. has been operating. So he went into great detail and at great length. He also said sensitive material was captured. But he also said this wasn't going to change his larger plans for Syria, that he was still withdrawing most of the U.S. troops except for this oil region, which is in the far, far east of the country, not the northwest where this raid took place.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the oil region, because we did hear some comments that he made, and we should fact check them about exactly what the U.S. role will with these oil depots, or what are they? What is there, and why is he talking about the oil in northern Syria?
Right. It's been a bit mystifying all the way through. Syria has oil. It's in the eastern and northeastern part of the country, but it was a modest oil producer. It produced enough oil for itself and a tiny bit of export even before the war. As the war went on, ISIS controlled that territory and were able in a very sort of crude fashion to get some of that oil out of the ground, smuggle it across the border, make money off of it. But after they've been driven out for the past couple years, that area, the oil is still in the ground, but the U.S. has bombed the facilities. They're greatly damaged. The Kurds are getting a minuscule amount. I mean, we're talking reports of 10, 20,000 barrels a day. So the president is not only talking about securing it and keeping it out of ISIS hands, which seems unrealistic given the state of ISIS today, but also talking about it as if it has tremendous economic value. He even cited the possibility of, I may want to make a deal and let somebody like ExxonMobil go in. I mean, this is a war zone, a tiny amount of oil.
And also territory that the U.S. does not control and is not part of sovereign U.S. territory. It's part of Syria, you know, technically. And so what role the U.S. could have about brokering some kind of oil deal is mystifying. I'm going to bring you in, Tam. A lot of things that are striking about this and the way that the president spoke of this, you know, again, it's very, very surprising to get so many details.
The president was extremely, I don't think we can overstate how graphic he was in describing this, talking in very specific detail about Baghdadi going into a tunnel with three children, saying that he died a coward, whimpering and screaming. It just truly remarkable to hear the president of the United States in some ways sort of spiking the football in a very just graphic way, saying that maybe he would even want this video to get out so that ISIS fighters could see it and see that Baghdadi wasn't some kind of hero. And then going back to the conversation you were just having about oil, you know, it's sort of remarkable that the president came out to announce this sort of this victory, this successful mission. And then he got sidetracked and started talking about oil. And he said the words, we should be able to take some, which is remarkable for a president to say about another country's resources.
That's right. And I guess it is striking simply because, you know, this is a very important moment, frankly. You know, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is a wanted terrorist. He has been wanted by Iraq. He has been wanted by Syria. He does not have a lot of friends in this region. And so this is a moment where the United States can rightly say we cooperated with a lot of the people in the region and we actually got something that we wanted done. And yet he goes into this conversation about oil. Tam, the other thing that struck me is his rhetoric, saying he had been looking for Baghdadi for three years.
Yeah, President Trump is personalizing this in a pretty remarkable way. You know, with past operations, presidents, if say President Obama announcing the bin Laden raid, it was a very somber announcement. He did not go into details about how the raid was carried out. And then there were like briefings afterwards. And there was actually a lot of criticism about the level of detail that came out from Obama administration officials. Well, President Trump is on live TV answering questions from reporters, getting into very specific details about how it worked, saying that he was in the Situation Room watching it like it was a movie, he says. He says that it started a little bit after 5 p.m. That he watched on video monitors. And he has now gone into detail about how they identified him, that they brought lab technicians, he said, with them. They got his DNA. They had to remove debris to get his body. And the president is telling reporters that after about 15 minutes, they were able to confirm that it was Baghdadi.
Greg, looking at this, one of the other things that the president was very clear about, that this was a message to all the other terrorists in the region, all the other terrorist organizations, saying that the successors to ISIS will also be hunted down, essentially.
Right. He said this was part of his larger commitment to going after terrorist groups. But this has always been a bit of a mixed message. At the same time, he was saying, I was part of, we knew about this. We scoped this out a couple weeks ago. We were tracking al-Baghdadi. At the same time, he's pulling U.S. forces out of Syria, where there are thousands of ISIS fighters sort of underground. And again, as we recall a couple months ago, he's talking about pulling out of Afghanistan. So he keeps talking about how hard he's hitting and going to hit terrorist groups, but also wants to get U.S. troops out of the regions. It's hard to sort of square that circle.
Just briefly, when he was talking, he said that this had been in the work for 2 weeks. So this is an operation that actually wasn't sort of reactive coming in at the last minute, but that this had actually been quite thoroughly planned.
Right. He made that very clear. And again, completely overlapping with what's been in the news in terms of talking about the withdrawal, but not something that happened last minute. It had been in the works for 2 weeks was the time frame he mentioned.
And he thanked a lot of the countries in the region, which, again, surprising some of them.
Absolutely. Syria, for example.
For example.
Russia, for example.
And he said Russia first.
Yeah,
that was the first country he thanked.
Yeah. I mean, considering the geopolitical realities of the conflict in Syria, where actually Russia is at odds or has been at odds with the United States and is a great ally of the Syrian leader, it is surprising that he would have mentioned those first in the same breath as Turkey, who the United States is also having a conflict with, and then Iraq, which really is an ally of the United States in every single way.
Right. So he sort of went across the board, both allies and rivals in the region. So, yes, that was very, very surprising. And he said that they did give, he again specifically cited that Russia and Turkey were informed that U.S. Troops were coming in helicopters, but were not told what the target was for this mission.
All right, we're just going to recap the latest news. President Trump has announced the death of the leader of ISIS, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, in a raid in northern Syria in a news conference at the White House. Joining me has been NPR's national security correspondent Greg Myrie. Thank you.
My pleasure.
And NPR White House correspondent Tamara Keith. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You have been listening to NPR's special coverage of President Trump's announcement from the White House. I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro, and you're listening to NPR News.